Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Steve Marks.
And I'm Nate Totten.
We've got a great episode for you. We are going to be talking about, obviously, a fantastic product because it's called the Smarks Roll, named after yours truly. So we're going to be talking about doing, like, Node.js and Python and Ruby in the cloud. This that you see behind us is a chat room built on Node.js with some Cloud Cover fans claiming their 15 seconds of fame during the show. So we're going to talk about how all that stuff works and a project that you can use to do that. Before that, of course, we're going to cover the news, and we're going to finish up by talking about some code that was written by Nate. So, yep. See, we've got... It's solid, awesome code because it was actually produced by the two of us. And that code is going to help people do better things, make better use of the CDN from yep. ASP.NET MVC apps.
Yep.
So let's start off with, let's get these people off the screen and start off with some news. This is kind of big news. This is the introduction of Windows Azure App Fabric Applications. Which is it's something of a mouthful. This is something that got announced at, well, I don't know. We've talked about it. We talked about it at PDC. I guess was the first real like yep. discussion about this sort of application model built on App Fabric. And then we said it's coming, and it is now here in the first CTP. It's a very limited CTP, so don't be upset when you can't get access. In fact, if you really want access, make sure you sign up, like, now and try to get in. But it's a very limited CTP. You get to it by going to, what is it, portal.appfabriclabs. There's a link down here. If you go to the App Fabric Labs portal, you click on Applications. Click the button in the corner that says "Request a Namespace."
Mm-hmm. Not the blue text that looks like a link.
I should have pulled it up here, but like, yeah, ignore the stuff that looks like that says like "Click here." Don't do that. It doesn't do anything. But there's a button in the upper left. Once you go to Applications, that says "Request a Namespace." It asks you a couple questions, and then you're sort of in the queue to get access. So. Remember, we warned you. It's a very limited first CTP of this stuff, so not everybody will get in.
Requesting access as we record the show, yeah. not necessarily
right.
when
By
it's
By the time
released.
You see this, it's yeah. too late. So we're doing you no good. But anyway, this is about building like multi-tier applications, composing different different services and different mm-hmm. components of your app together. It's actually a lot of stuff, and mm-hmm. It's a developing story. We're probably going to have to dedicate a show, I think, to actually diving into this pretty soon and show these things. But sign up now, not knowing what it is. Try to get
it's
access.
It's a cool technology. It's yeah. worth some time.
You're going to want to be able to play with it, and then we'll talk about it more. Oh, look at the blinking. People are trying to talk to us. Yes, Wade Wegner. Wade Wegner, who? Look at this. Wade is not on the show, is not co-hosting because he's on paternity leave, and of course he's shutting the computers off, and he's not yeah. on email, whatever. And then I tweet, hey, we're going to be doing Cloud Cover, and we're going to use this chat app. And Wade joins and is just sort of giving us a hard time and not contributing. I just want to point that out. Wade, we're mocking you right now. Okay. Moving on, more App Fabric stuff. There is a new Windows Azure App Fabric SDK released like earlier this week, I guess, not too long ago. It's basically bug fixes, but you should pick it up. It fixes a couple things. If you're using caching, it fixes some of those bugs. There's a link here that actually tells you all the stuff that got fixed in the April release. That makes it sound like it was kind of a while ago. That can't be right. Addendum to the April release notes. Yeah, this is sort of on the refreshed one, I guess. So there's some bugs that are fixed. Might as well pick it up. It's not a new feature sort of thing, but it's some new stuff. This one, we have this page up because let me refresh and find out. But no, not yet. Sometime soon, we hope, before this show goes live. If you go to the Windows Azure blog, you will see a message there that says starting July 1st, ingress, so inbound bandwidth to the data center in Windows Azure is completely free all the time. It already was in like off-peak hours, which sort of depends on what data center you're in. You know, go look up the details on that. But now you don't have to, because starting July 1st, it doesn't matter when it is. No. All the ingress is free. That's kind of cool because, well, it's good for people who actually have services where people upload lots of stuff. I mean, because there you have lots of ingress and you can't control when it is, and it's nice that it's free. But I think it's particularly useful for people who have to bring in a bunch of data or are thinking about importing something and whatever.
Uploading a VM, you know, your virtual machine, things like that.
Yeah,
save you some money.
Save some money. For one-time transfers, it's probably saving you very little because it costs like 10 cents a gigabyte to upload stuff, but. But we have customers who are trying to ingest, you know, like a terabyte of stuff or whatever, and then it starts to actually make a significant difference, and nobody wants to worry about having to script it so it runs in the middle of the night to do, I don't know. So it's nice. Hopefully people appreciate that. That's just one of those sort of cool pricing things. Nate, do you know any more about this than I do? This is Scott's blog about the ASP.NET universal providers.
Yeah, I think... This is just an update to the ASP.NET like membership provider, profile provider. I think the one thing worth mentioning is that it now supports SQL Azure sort of out of the box. So as where before you had to, you could get it to work, but you sort of had to run a modified script of the membership providers and whatnot, just you know, to take out some stuff that wasn't supported in SQL Azure. But now the providers work out of the box, so
good.
Check that out.
This is cool. It's a quite long post, actually. Oh, it's not as bad. It's all the comments that make it look longer than that. But yeah, so that's over on Scott's blog, and so we'll link over there so you can read a little bit more about it and check that out. Let's put these guys back up on the screen for a second while we talk about where we're actually headed now. So transitioning into our feature of the week. I shipped some code called the Smarks Roll that was based on a talk that I gave at Mix about doing Python and Ruby and Node.js, which is server-side JavaScript, in Windows Azure. And all that stuff led out of me trying to, you know, play around with startup tasks, and you know, what runtimes could I install, how could I get that working. It evolved into something that is... that installs a bunch of runtimes, sets up a reverse proxy, syncs code from blob storage or from Git, and ended up sort of being its own whole sort of big thing. And so I've released all that code on CodePlex. It's at smarksworld.codeplex.com. And I thought we would just go through the basics of how that works, what you can kind of learn about Windows Azure features based on that. Like, I think actually you learn a lot about the power of startup tasks and elevated privileges. And so we could talk a little bit about that, just let people know what is there and point people towards the download. This is sort of, you're already seeing a demo of this because this is a Node.js chat app that's running in Windows Azure, and it's using the Smarks role to kind of get that stuff all going. And it's using table storage in the back end, and so it's basically, I missed black screens with green text and IRC-like commands. In fact, let me slap Wade around a little bit there. So put this thing together. Here's another example of using the Smarks role. This is my blog. This is a Ruby app using Sinatra as a web framework. Also running Windows Azure, also using the same Smarks role code. I don't know if I've shown you this one.
I haven't seen this, no.
I'm scared to... Uh-oh, I have to paste a key for this to work. I'm scared to do it. But anyway, but you guys can do it. If you go to blobedit.cloudapp.net and you put in a storage account and key and a container name, basically opens a text editor with like a tree view so that you can just edit text in the...
And is that how you publish your blog?
It's not how I publish. So for all these things, there's sort of... The way the Smarks role works is your actual app code either goes somewhere in Git In like a public repository, or actually it doesn't have to be a public repository, it just has to be out on the internet. So mm-hmm. I've been using GitHub, I think most people would, or syncs it from blob storage, and so I can edit the code of, so if I'm doing it from blob storage, I can mm-hmm. sort of edit that code through the browser using this thing, but my blog is all just lives on GitHub, and the gotcha. Chat app lives on GitHub.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of it. Let me show you guys. So right now I've got, I guess I could zoom for fun. At smarksworld.cloudapp.net, I am syncing code from this container in blob storage. So I'm not using Git here. I'm just mm-hmm. copying stuff from blob storage. And right now it's got a Node app up there, but we can go, let's go to Ruby and grab some files. And I'm just using Clumsy Leaf Cloud Explorer. Let's delete those and paste in some Ruby code. And now if we sort of bounce on the F5 key here, at some point, so now it's picking up the Ruby code mm-hmm. and copying it locally. It's installing any gems that are required. And then it's one by one, it should be restarting processes. And now it's... So some of the processes are Node, some are Ruby.
Yep.
If we keep refreshing, we'll eventually sort of get all Ruby.
Is this running on multiple instances, or is it a single instance?
Okay. So this is actually running, it's both running multiple instances of a web role, mm-hmm. and within the web role, it's running four processes of either Node or Ruby or whatever. And so the processes, as new stuff comes in, it comes to all the instances, and then it sort of one by one restarts those processes running the new stuff. Mm-hmm. So now if I keep refreshing, we'll just see the Ruby one.
Cool.
I was going to open it up, but let's do, just for completeness, let's do the Python one. And so you can see, like, the only code that I have, I just have a Python app. I'm using Tornado as the web mm-hmm. as the web server, but you can use whatever you want. And that's it. So there's no Windows Azure-y stuff in here except sort of the app. If I refresh here, eventually we should see some Python.
Cool.
So... That's kind of neat. It's sort of, you know, last time you were on the show, actually, mm-hmm. we were talking about sort of other ways to get bits into the cloud and talking about, that was the last time you were on the show, right? You weren't on between. Yeah, so we were talking about, what is it called? It's the multi, you have a NuGet package now, right?
I can't remember what it's called.
I don't remember either.
We'll put a link or something.
We'll put the link. But we were talking about sort of deploying to Windows Azure without doing a Windows Azure sort of role deployment and whatever. This is doing that in addition to sort of installing, the different runtimes for some different languages. I thought maybe we could go to the whiteboard and just sort of sketch out what the actual solution looks like how it's actually running this mm-hmm. stuff, just to give people feel for the moving parts, and then maybe that's it. Maybe we'll leave people to sort of the code from then on to kind of check it out or use it.
Sounds good.
So let's go to the whiteboard. Okay, so let's draw like sort of the normal and what you see here, like the flow of kind of a Windows Azure app, right? Everybody knows. I told you I was going to draw a trapezoid at some point here. And here it is. Everybody knows there's a load balancer in front of your app in Windows Azure. So traffic comes in here. It gets sent to, you know, some number of instances of some web role or a worker role or whatever. And this is sort of the basic flow of this. And so when we were talking about, you know, are we running multiple instances of this stuff? Yes, it's just a regular Windows Azure app. You run as many instances as you want. In the case of my blog, I'm running two small instances of a web role, and there's a load balancer in front of it. Okay, so this is normal. So Smarks role is no different. Even if this is a Smarks role, which is really just some code that goes in a web role, it still looks like this.
And where is this is a web role?
This
said,
is
not
a web
a
role,
okay?
Yeah,
because you're using IS for
exactly. Okay. A lot of people might expect this to be a worker role because, like, when we talk about like running Java in Windows Azure, we mm-hmm. usually do that in a worker role because we're not using IIS. We're usually using Apache Tomcat or Jetty or something like that. And so we don't need IIS as the web server. And in fact, we don't want it binding to port 80 and not letting us do it on some, on another process. So you might expect that if I'm running something like Python with Tornado is a web server. Like, why do I need something else? And so you might expect it to be a worker role. I am doing a web role, and it's because I'm using IIS and application request routing, or the pirate module, as I call it.
The pirate module, yes.
ARR. R. And in using that, then, you know, that's why I need IIS set up, and the easiest way to do that is to just use a web role.
Can you draw the pirate on there, though, for clarity?
Oh, yeah. I think that we do need a... I have a picture of a pirate from my slides from Mix that was hand-drawn and pretty good. I don't know if I can draw him again. What did he have? He had, like, a pirate hat, which I think is, like, a Lego block, pretty much, for me. Mm-hmm. And then maybe there's, like, some skull here. Does that look like a skull?
Yeah.
And, like, he's here, and he's got an eye patch. I think the eye patch is really... That's how you know... He's a happy pirate.
All right.
Does that look like a pirate?
Yeah, he's not as menacing as I would hope, but...
Well, no, because he's friendly. He's the friendly application request routing pirate.
Fair enough.
Okay.
So fair enough.
That's why we went to the whiteboard, really, was so that I could draw that picture. But let me show... So, you know, we have this web role. Let me just sort of blow up kind of what's in that web role when it's a Smarks role. So this is what a Smarks role looks like. So just like any web role, you know, you've got kind of Windows Azure sets up the OS for you, including, you know, like IIS. And then your code sort of goes here, right? So whatever it is, you know, your app goes here in sort of a normal web role. In the case of a Smarks role, that's like the Smarks role code there. And one of the things it does is it installs, we should probably sort of move it up like this. So it installs the Ruby runtime, it installs Python, losing stuff, it installs node.js, and it installs Git. And so, because it's doing this sort of syncing from a Git repository, if that's how you publish your code, over here it installs the, the Web Farm Framework in IIS and the Pirate Module, Application Request Routing. Okay, so it sort of installs this. So before anything happens, really what the Smarks role is a bunch of startup tasks. All this stuff is done with startup tasks that just unzip things or run installers or whatever to get all these different runtimes and tools on here and modules in IIS, et cetera. And then I didn't leave room to really draw much else. But the sort of flow then inside here is, remember again, like out here we've got a load balancer sending stuff in. Now this gets to... application request routing and IIS, which is acting as a reverse proxy over any number, really. It's configurable, I think, up to 8 in the code that I put, of, say, Python processes. Let's just assume it's a Python app. And so we actually have Python.exe running, you know, n times, and application request routing is kind of sending them all here. And the main reason you do this, people might wonder why you don't just have one of these. Mm-hmm. And There are a couple possible reasons. One big reason, though, is that for a lot of these web servers and frameworks that are built on Python, Ruby, and Node, they basically run single process, single thread. It's sort of this new concurrency model of let's not spin up threads for all these requests that are simultaneous. We'll just do everything in an async model. Mm-hmm. And doing that pretty much means you take advantage of one CPU core because you don't have some other thread to go use the other CPUs. And so what people usually do is they run a reverse proxy in front of several processes. So you usually want at least as many processes as you have cores on the machine. So in a small VM in Windows Azure, there is only one core. Mm-hmm. So you could actually just have one of these. In fact, in the chat app, I do only have one running. But most of the time, I think having more than one is good. And plus, that means when I update the code, because I'm plugging in new code, there's sort of a continuously running thing that's pulling from Git or blob storage, just sort of in a loop. and it's pulling new code, and anytime it shows up, it's restarting these processes.
Yep.
And if you have more than one, then you can restart them one at a time. That's why we saw sort of the mixed,
gotcha.
Like it was half Ruby, half Node as I was refreshing. And it was because these processes are sort of getting updated one at a time. And so that lets you avoid downtime during those things. And
can you run multiple of these? So can you run, say, Node.js and Python processes at the same time, or do you only do one or the other?
Not in the code I wrote. I mean,
okay.
You certainly could, right? But right, the Smarks role, it's really dumb. It looks for, if there's a file called app.py, it runs Python.
Okay.
And if it's app.rb, it runs Ruby. And if it's app.js, it runs Node. And in whatever order I put those checks in the code, it grabs whatever the first one is and it runs that. And so these things are running, by the way, on different ports. So like this will be port 9000, this will be port 9001, 9002, 9003. But application request routing is listening on port 80 and sort of forwarding these things. So it all comes on port 80, but it looks like this. So if you wanted to run multiple things, you actually, all the runtimes are there. So I actually have some code that, like, is Ruby code that calls out to a Python script to do syntax highlighting of source code.
Okay.
And so since they're all there, you can always call them from each other and whatever. But there's going to be one process that's going to be one of these languages that's listening on these ports.
Gotcha.
And actually serving up, you know, web traffic. But that's just because that's the way I've designed the system. A big meta point about all this is that Windows Azure doesn't care what you're doing, right? That you can install these things, you can run them however you want. Windows Azure wants to know, you know, where do you want the traffic sent? What ports do you have open? How many VMs do you want? And then it'll just happily run whatever code you put there. So this Smarks role is one example of kind of trying to make a nice framework for running Python, Ruby, and Node. But the broader point is you can build any sort of thing like this.
Cool.
So maybe we should hop back over there and talk a little bit more before we wrap this up. So to the laptop. All right, so I see this blinking thing here that says there are 106 new messages in the chat app, so I thought I would open it up to give people an opportunity. So their things will be seen. As you can see, there's quite a bit of attempts to hack things. Look at this. This has been a crazy, crazy chat session. Okay. Anyway, that's
awesome.
What's going on. So
I think one thing that you should mention is. How ready, you know, is this ready for production? Is this just a sample? You know, could this be made to work in production? I think that's something people would be interested to hear about.
Yes. So despite me calling it version 1.1 and a stable release, this is, you know, code that Steve Marks wrote, which has the standard. There should be some Steve Marks disclaimer that is
works,
like,
well,
is
that
like
works
it
on
was
my machine
by Steve Marks. So what do you expect, right? And so,
well, so we should make that like a button or something with you.
Yeah, just like well, hey, it worked for me. So this is code. You know, it's I hesitate to tell people to go use this in production unless they feel. Let's put it this way. There's no support that's going to come from Microsoft for this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you call us up and say, well, I deployed this stuff and it's running using the Smarks role and it doesn't work, we'll, of course, support you on any Windows. I mean, we support whatever you are running on Windows Azure to the extent that it's Windows Azure stuff that we're supporting, right?
And you'll put your cell phone
up, right? But if your code is really bad, then, no. But if your code's really bad, then that's sort of your problem. And if part of your code is the code you got from smarksroll.codeplex.com, and it turns out that's really bad, that's, again, that's not something Microsoft supports. So I'd say it's not terribly well supported. I will try to fix, if you guys find issues, I'll try to fix them as best as I can. But it does seem to work. I've had I've been running my blog pretty much this way. Some are on sort of earlier architectures of that code, but from pretty much this exact code, I've had it running for many months without issues. Last night, actually, this is kind of funny. Last night, I got an email from somebody who said, who was basically trying to make a book form out of my blog so they could put it on their Kindle and just sort of read it. So they wanted to get sort of, you know, run it through like Instapaper or something, you know, and get sort of like everything. But my blog shows like 5 entries at a time, and then you have to sort of click the next one. So it's kind of a pain for him to go back and get all these things. And he said, is there any chance there's like a query string parameter that fetches more than 5? And I replied in like 10 minutes with like the git diff, and I just did a git push to my code. By the way, the code for my blog and for the chat app and for the blob edit thing are all actually on GitHub, so you can go read the code. So you can see the change that I made on my blog last night to do this. So I've been using it. It seems to work. I'm obviously not running anything giant scale or, you know, production. So, you know.
But in theory, I mean, you could make, I mean, you know, Python runs on Windows, Node.js can be made to run on Windows. You could probably make it work in a...
Right. If someone came to me and said, hey, I wrote this thing that's kind of like the SmartSquare, right? Like, I wrote some code that launches Ruby and whatever. Is that okay to do in production? I would say absolutely. Because it's your code that you're, you know... The reason I give the caveat is, if you grab my code and just assume it's going to work and there are no flaws in it, that's a mistake. If you grab this code and read it, it's a few hundred lines of code. It's not, like, a lot of code. It's actually... I think it's more batch files during the startup task of installing stuff than it is actual runtime code. And if you go read it and you're comfortable with it, then by all means use it, and there's nothing, this doesn't violate any support policy. So you're good, and you can use this in production. I just want the, but this code itself is not necessarily production ready, is not supported, et cetera. So that's kind of where it is. I'm fairly comfortable with it, but that's what it is. And you can actually go up here, and if you go to the downloads page, you can just download a package. The nice thing about, since your app code goes somewhere else, it goes like in blob storage or on GitHub or something, you don't actually need to build a Windows Azure package with that code in it, which means the package is the same for everybody. So if you just grab the package that corresponds to the VM size you want, you can just go deploy. You just have to change the config setting to say what blob storage account to use or what Git repository to sync. And you can just drop it. So it's easy to use. I hope people will actually try it out and give me some feedback on it. All right, enough of a sales pitch for the SmartSquirrel. Let's put it to bed at that. Which means it's the best, it's the most magical time of the Cloud Cover Show, which is the moments preceding the tip of the week, because this is where our fabulous editor, Bob, puts in an intro for us.
And this really one is going to be the intro. Best one yet I've heard.
It's going to be the best one. No pressure, rumor has it that...
I think he's brilliant.
I think, you know what, it's summer has just begun in North America, at least.
I think for everyone else, it probably was like a month ago. For us, it's just got warm.
You know what I recently learned? Not only in Australia, of course, it's a different hemisphere, which means the seasons are roughly reversed, right? But they also don't do the solstice thing or whatever. Like, their first day of summer is the first day of the month. I forget which month it is. But they actually go by the months on the calendar, which means it's really easy to know when it is.
Yeah.
While I had to hear on the radio, hey, did you know it's summer now? But anyway, regardless, where we are right now, it just began to be summer. And so I think we should have a summer-themed, us frolicking in the park, hanging out at the beach, something like that would be perfect. And as Nate said, this is going to be the best tip of the week intro ever. Absolutely. So with that, here is your tip of the week. And we're back. Nate, take it away, because this is your stuff.
All right. So this is a little project I worked on my free time. It's the Windows Azure CDN Helper. So
wait, you have free time?
Well, you know.
I'm going to have to talk to your manager about
that. Yeah. I sacrifice sleep, I guess. No.
Yeah.
So basically it's a nice set of extensions for MVC3 that basically helps you use the Windows Azure CDN So the Windows Azure CDN you can use right with blob storage or hosted from your web role. So this kind of supports both of them, and what it allows you to do is just sort of leave your app as it is. You know, use your scripts and leave your scripts in the script folder, leave all your content in the content folder, images, etc. And you know, you don't have to worry about like moving around or making a bunch of URL rewrite rules, because if you're hosting from the blob or from the your web role, it'll host from backslash CDN.
Right.
So we sort of move everything, take care of all that for you. So, an easy way to use the Azure CDN and speed up your app. We also do stuff like image compression, and we actually integrated with the App Sprites library. So we do like image sprites, CSS.
Images, right?
We compress we use the Ajax minifier to compress CSS and JavaScript. So it'll help you get real high on the Google page speed score, the Y slow score.
Right.
So, new MVC 3 web app.
It's an internet application. That's good. That's my favorite kind of MVC app, is the one that works on the internet.
For the internets.
Yeah.
So,
that's where I use MVC most, is on the internet.
Yeah, generally. So, NuGet package, it is called CDN Helpers. All right, so we have two different versions, CDN Helpers for Razor and for ASPX. They're actually the exact same code. The only difference is I have, there's one difference with the way the web.config transform works. Just with Razor, you have to add your namespace to a different location than with ASPX pages. So that's the only difference. Otherwise, they're exactly the same. And actually, if you wanted to use both simultaneously, just install one or the other and then add the appropriate config section. So it's got a number of dependencies. We use Web Activator to set it up. And then, like I said, the Ajax minifier and the Sprite library. So minimize that. So we got, we've got our CDN folder and our app start for our Web Activator. So it's a little simple configuration here. We kind of give you the default config. Really, the only thing you need to do to get started, if you're hosting from your from your web role, is actually just set your namespace here to whatever your Azure namespace is.
AZ1234 sort of thing you get.
Yep. And then you can also, if you want, you can use the blob storage backing, and this will actually take all your files and automatically transfer them when the app starts up to blob storage.
Oh, I see. So at startup, what happens? So this looks and this goes, finds everything in my scripts and content and does all the minification and the image combination and compression and whatever, and then either copies it somewhere to blob storage
or copies it to the CDN directory, and then if you're using blob storage, because that's where it gathers everything up and then saves the minified version of it.
Okay.
And then if you're using blob storage, it'll copy everything from / CDN to your blob container, and that's where you would set up your
and then how do I reference
account.
But doesn't all my code say /site/scripts/something? Do I have to change that?
So then what you need to do is we have some extension methods, so let's just go ahead and register or use those use our new extension method. So actually, let's go back here. One thing to note is, so there's some, basically what you need to do if you want to combine JavaScript and CSS files is you register them. So I'm registering this. I'm just using Modernizer, and I'm registering this as what I'm calling our core JavaScript file. And I can add as many JavaScript files as I want here, and same for the CSS. So
right.
I've got core JavaScript, which combines all these files, and site CSS file, which combines all my CSS files. So to reference those, just go back to my layout page and let's build that so we get our.
My toolbars aren't there, but Control Shift B will probably.
Yeah, I never
do the build.
All right. Yeah, there we go.
No, I went on this. I think it might be Scott Hanselman's fault. I remember I read somebody's blog post about just cleaning up some of the clutter in Visual Studio.
Yeah.
So I went crazy and I got rid of all these buttons
and
menus
the
just to like
everything.
Try to keep it. And I mostly use the keyboard anyway. So
I
mostly do it just to mess up other people's.
Yeah, on the show.
Yeah, so that people can't.
So
see.
Well, actually, let's just replace this. So what we're gonna do?
We should probably. Zoom, if you want to go
How do you do that?
Bump up the...
Oh, just zoom.
Yeah, you just can just make it 150, probably.
Is good. Oh, perfect. Yeah. All right, so we're going to...
We should have done that on the other screen, but it doesn't matter. People will figure it out.
Oh, and this is all the sources are available to
download.
You just
have to... Installing a NuGet package takes you 2 seconds, so you can quickly do exactly what we've done.
Your IntelliSense isn't working, but whatever.
No, I have IntelliSense disabled, too. Control-J. Control-J will pop up.
Jeez, you're killing me here. All right. So
no one ever wants to use my laptop.
I know, like,
I've got what people didn't see is that as we switched laptops during that tip of the week intro, we had to switch keyboard layouts because I don't type with the QWERTY keyboard. So I don't type QWERTY. I have IntelliSense turned off. There's no build menu. It's it's not a good laptop.
It's a real. It makes me look like I barely even know how to use Visual Studio.
Yeah,
without IntelliSense, I don't even know what. So to use our new combined CSS file, we're going to use this new extension method, CDN combine CSS, and we're going to, we register it by our key, so we named it site.
So that's the thing, that's what we called it in
this config. Yep.
Thing here.
We registered it as site, so.
I see.
And then we can do the same, let's replace this with our.
And so if I used blob storage, does that mean that would now turn into a link to a URL in blob storage?
Or, yes.
Well, it would still be to a CDN location, right?
Yes. The link will always turn to a CDN location. Yeah.
Oh, so it's no different, actually. Right. So it's either, it really depends, is the CDN URL pointing at your app, in which case the ultimate destination is /CDN/ some combined script or something.
Yep.
Or is that CDN thing pointing to blob storage, in which case the ultimate location is some blob container, probably also under CDN, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's configurable, but by default it's in the container CDN. So first we're going to run it. We actually have it, when it's in debug mode, we actually still use the local files, but we'll use the combined and minified local files that are in your CDN folder. So let's just go ahead and run this, and then we can show a couple things that it does. All right, so...
I may have zoomed.
That's fantastic.
Control-0 will get you back to
normal. That's all right, we're just
going to
look at the
code. We don't care,
all right. So, again, we're running in debug mode, so we're not actually using the CDN URL.
Right.
So what happened here is we've got this new CSS file, and what we actually do for the name of the file is we MD5 hash that and name it the result of that hash. So that way, we actually, in the CDN, we actually set like a 1-year cache expiration, so you don't need to worry about setting a 1 week and doing a short cache and an update. We just say hash for a long time.
Yep. The hash will change, which means the name will change.
Exactly.
Which means who cares that you've cached the other thing?
Absolutely.
Because now we'll start getting the new thing. That's by the way, we may have talked about that on the show before, but it's a very good best practice for when you're using caching, period, anywhere, is to have the name of the file change when the content changes, because there's no other way to automatically expire all the caches in the world. Even if we gave you some way to do it in our CDN, you've set cache headers that say it's okay for my machine to have cached
proxies,
it, and for every proxy
to cache
it.
Yep.
There's no good way to expire it everywhere except to stop referencing it. So if you change the name, now everybody looks for the new thing which hasn't been cached yet, and it comes out. And a hash is a very convenient way to make sure the name changes when the content changes.
And initially I had done this with like a query string with like a version number and like the assembly number.
A lot of people do that,
The problem is, though, I actually read a lot of proxy servers will never cache static content if there's... Well, they either won't cache static content with a query string, or they'll ignore the query string. So there's a number of problems. That's why I would say, you could do it with a version number or a hash or whatever, but do it in the path to the file, not in the query string.
That's a good tip.
And then we also, one thing to note here is we've got our jQuery file. There's another feature when we enable... we're going to turn debugging off and then see how it'll look without debugging. But since we haven't deployed it, it's not actually going to find the files. But so one thing to point out here is we have all a bunch of new files here. So So this is actually our new JavaScript file, and it's been it would have been combined and minified, and same thing with our CSS file. So let's.
And those are just temporary files. Like, some people may be concerned that we've generated some files. Now we have to add them to the project to make sure they get. But that's absolutely not.
They get rebuilt when your application starts.
Right.
So
you don't have to deploy these or save any of those. Those are sort of a side effect of running the app.
Yeah. And so a lot of people normally do this sort of static content combining. Like the Ajax Minifier library gives you a build task.
Yep.
Which is fine for certain, you know, for certain things. I just prefer the on startup just because it's easier. Like, you don't have to worry about, like, you know, making sure, you add those files, you deploy those files.
It happens once in the life cycle of the app, so who cares?
Exactly.
You know? So, I mean, theoretically, this app starts up slightly slower than one that wasn't doing this.
Yeah.
But it's by some minuscule amount, and it only happens once, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So, and for me, it's easier, you know.
Because you can't ever make a mistake and forget to have done that task or something, you know, have some old content or something. This makes sure it's up to date.
And we also do, if anyone's used the app sprites, it's an image optimization library. We support that also. So to use that, it's the same as you would normally use your. And I've got on the CodePlex site, I have examples of how to use it. But you'd add your files to the app sprites folder, and then it actually combines them and minifies them and uses the CSS sprites to display those images. And for that, we will basically do the same sort of hashing, and we'll store all the images and everything in another hashed folder. So again, even with the sprite images, even though they're referenced from CSS and whatnot, they still will break when you rededeploy. So now what we're going to do here is let's turn debugging off. I have this, basically this is a delegate you can set to say when you want it to run as debugging. Right now I just say it's in debug mode if it's in localhost. I'm just going to turn that off so we can see the full URL, what happens. And it's not
This page is going to break, right?
Yeah, there's no CSS in JavaScript anymore because it's going to now look at...
Right, it's now pointing to some bogus CDN location.
Namespace, which we didn't even set yet. So, why didn't that work? Okay, well...
Uh-oh. But
we'll skip this. But
we'll have
there's
to figure out the jQuery thing. But right, the important I think. Well, there are a couple things, right? But the link in the script. That's how it would real look, right?
Yep.
On the if I deployed this to Windows Azure,
yes.
That's what those things would look like with. And a proper CDN URL.
Yes. So this is the CDN URL, and they're requesting from /CDN. I realize there's actually... I'll make an incremental update. So what happens with the jQuery files?
Yeah.
I have this XML file that defines any CDN file you want. So right now I have all of them that are in the Microsoft Ajax CDN.
Right.
So automatically, if you reference like jQuery 1.5, when you deploy, it'll actually use the Ajax CDN.
To, yeah.
Yep. And you could change. You know, you could add the Yahoo CDN ones if you wanted to use like YUI or anything like that. So. We kind of give you, you know, that's a free CDN. You don't have to pay for the bandwidth, and most likely everyone has it loaded already, so it's a good one to use.
Yeah, I always do that. That's like I go to my MVC project after created, and I go look in jQuery, and then I have to go search for the URL for the CDN. So that's actually quite handy.
Oh, we didn't CDN content. That's our problem.
So, I see. So we didn't actually
change it.
We didn't instruct it to do that.
Yeah.
So. Okay. So this time, the jQuery URL should look right.
Voila. There we go. So now jQuery is coming from the... you need to change it from the normal content to CDN.
Right,
content.
So it actually invokes your code, which has the chance to rewrite.
Makes
it.
Makes sense why my code didn't pick it up as we weren't
calling
it.
Right, because we didn't let it run. Why did this code run? Oh, because we didn't run it.
And we also have some additional extensions like CDN sprite image, things like that. And again, that's documented on the CodePlex site. I kind of ran the default project through. You know, I deployed it. The default MVC app and deployed it to Azure, and then used like the Google code, you know, Google page speed test, and you know, got something like 80 out of 100. And after just adding, you know, doing these simple things we showed here, it's like up to 96 out of 100. So, pretty cheap way to get some better performance out of your app.
Yeah, this takes almost no work, right? I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about what it does, but I mean, actually use this. It's a NuGet install package. Mm-hmm. You've got to put in the URL for the CDN. So, I mean, there's one place where you got to actually put your AZ whatever or whatever. And then you have to change script references and link references to use the CDN version. Oh, I guess you have to define, like, what gets combined. So you have to list, so you have to actually list the files you want to combine.
Yes.
And sort of set that up. But, I mean, this is not much work to get this all working. And it works. What I like is it's actually, it's kind of hard with the slash CDN URL to get something that works locally and then works when you deploy to Windows Azure in staging and then in production. It's hard to get all those environments to work because you have this problem of sort of the paths. At least here you can run it locally and get it, and it just sort of serves it out of that CDN folder.
Absolutely.
And then when you deploy it, it gives you the full blown correct URL.
Yep. And you could nice. Change this, like you said, if it's in so this is a delegate that gets called every time. It's not just a property, is true or false. Mm-hmm. So we do that because you could actually look at the request and say, hey, if this request is actually from this domain or something, then use the CDN.
So even for staging, you could actually get it to not use
the CDN. Not use the CDN, absolutely. Yep.
Very cool.
So that's that, yeah.
All right. Well, that was pretty good. Thanks for being on the show again, Nate. You know what I realized is that we never actually explained who you are
at
the beginning, because you're a different person than you were last time you were here.
So I was actually at a different company and I was a guest. Now I'm actually a technical evangelist at Microsoft, so I'm a
now
an employee, which is why
like
we didn't
job
really
to do this. And I didn't introduce you because I sort of figured people know, but maybe people don't know that
probably not.
That Nate is you're one of our newest. You're not actually the newest, but you are fairly new to being a sort of full-time Windows Azure evangelist at Microsoft, which is good. So welcome aboard. We should have done this at the beginning, but
that's all right. But we'll chop that out and
thanks for we'll just bobble fix it in editing. I mean, whatever. He'll make it seem like we just said
completely
that
seamless
the intro. Yeah, he'll still have the chat stuff up in the
absolutely
back. He'll like green screen it. But that's very cool. So check that out. I mean, it's that NuGet package. There's also a CodePlex page.
Yeah,
we'll put all the links in there. And check out Smark's role, of course, too. I hope. You can't really combine the two, unfortunately. It's one's for ASP.NET and the other one isn't.
Yeah.
But anyway, as always, go on to at Cloud Cover Show and say stuff to us there on the Twitters. I guess you don't go to Cloud Cover Show, but go to Twitter and say at Cloud Cover Show. And we will listen and promptly ignore everything you say and then cover stuff in future episodes. What are you going back to the chat?
I was going to pull the chat up one more time.
It's is it the first one? Is it the one that says at Smarks?
There we go.
There we go. Okay, we've got Wilt says this is a cool app. Thank you. Wow, there's like a whole conversation that we've been missing. I'm going to go hang out on the chat thing from now on. But anyway, thanks a lot, and until next time, we'll see you.